Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. They say that there's only three types of people in the world. Those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. I'm talking mothers of special needs and very young children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases, and a host of others. I can go on and on. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Sounds nasty, doesn't it? Well, it is. So, we have an exciting show planned for you today, and we want you to stay tuned because author Dr. Joan Borisenko, sounds Russian, a distinguished pioneer in integrative medicine, she is a world-renowned expert in the mind-body connection. You do not want to miss this interview, folks. I am your host, Dave Nassani, as I said, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are, well, let's see, they're selfless, they're sacrificial, they're caring. Oh, yeah, and they're also very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, come on, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they tell you to, I don't know, if the oxygen mask like falls out of the ceiling, that you're supposed to put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. And the reason they tell you that is because they know that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones. And then you won't be of any help to anybody with anything. And guess what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects they can have on us. It automatically throws us into this other thing called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, there is only one way out of the grief process, and that's to go through the grief process. Yeah, you can't go around it. You can't go over it. You can't go under it. You got to go through it. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my show and my radio podcast, my books, my videos, my blog. I know what you're thinking. It's all about me. No, it's not all about me. It's all about you, actually. So go to my website, caregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregiverscaregiver.com. And take our short quiz that will assess if you are a candidate for burnout. And just for doing that, I'm going to email you my first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, absolutely free. Wow, what a deal. Now, I'd like to take this moment and thank my last week's guest, Denise Ruth, long-distance cross-country caregiver for her mother, discusses the subject of mental and emotional caregiver burnout and the challenges and responsibility of being a power of attorney in a long-distance situation. All right, enough of that. I'm going to unmute my guest now. Joan, are you there? Thank you so much for patiently sitting through all the introduction stuff for our first-time listeners.
I am, Dave. Thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, the pleasure is ours and the honor is ours for taking the time out of your very busy schedule and allowing me to interview today. I really appreciate it. And why don't you begin by telling us a little bit about yourself? Just who is Joan Borisenko? I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Well, you are. That's right. That's actually a Ukrainian name when you have an E-N-K-O ending. And
that is very close to Russian, isn't it?
It is.
I can call him, I tell you. Go ahead.
I approach the idea of caregiving from being a medical professional. And my particular field is mind-body medicine. And I'm both a licensed clinical psychologist, and I'm also a basic scientist. I'm a cancer cell biologist by training with a degree from Harvard Medical School. And back in the 1980s, I had set up a mind-body clinic with Dr. Herbert Benson, who's well known as really the first physician who brought meditation to medicine to relieve stress. And then an Israeli colleague of ours, Dr. Ilan Kutz, who is a psychiatrist. And we set up one of the first mind-body clinics in the United States. But a year after we set up that clinic, which was for anyone with a stress-related illness, chronic illness of any type, the AIDS epidemic started. And we were deluged with mostly young men who at that point had a disease that was almost uniformly fatal very quickly. And so I set up a mind-body clinic for people with AIDS, and I found I was burning out really quickly. I was so filled with grief, Dave. I was sitting at the deathbeds of young people, and it just seems wrong. It seems you should live your life first. And I know you have a lot of listeners who are caregivers for their children.
Sure.
And it felt a little bit like that for me, out of the natural order. And then I was keeping very odd hours, as caregivers do, when somebody says, "I'm dying, would you sit with me?" My tendency was to put everything aside, sit with the dying. I was also running a cancer clinic, so between the AIDS clinic and the cancer clinic, I had a lot of patients who I really cared for very, very deeply. And when it was possible, I would sit with them during the dying process. So I had two kids at home. At that time, the kids were maybe 10 and 14 when things started. And I was trying to balance, as caregivers do, my children's lives, my life with my husband, a commute of an hour in both directions, and the needs of the patients that I was working with. And pretty soon I found myself so fatigued, so frazzled. I thought I had chronic fatigue syndrome. Something was really wrong physically. I couldn't sleep well. I was getting a variety of aches and pains. And back in the day, this was back in the 1980s, you didn't hear a lot about burnout, Dave. So
right.
I didn't know what was wrong with me. And at the same time, I could see that it was a hard time for anybody working with the AIDS population. And I actually wanted to start a support group. I sent invitations out throughout the hospital in Boston where I worked for people to be able to share their feelings and their grief over working with people with AIDS. And everyone was so busy that nobody could come. And I think it was a major problem for us all that we didn't know which end was up. We didn't know what was wrong with us. And we didn't have time to find support. Which is why a program and a website like yours are so important for people, because the support actually cuts down the burnout. It's a survival strategy.
Yeah, back in the 80s, we didn't have access to the internet the way we do today. So that was a
That's
real problem,
right.
wasn't it?
Well, it was. We didn't even dream of the internet yet.
Yes. Great support now
use.
For caregivers. If you're not online, Googling, you know, support group and then your particular thing, whether it's, you know, AIDS or arthritis or Lou Gehrig's disease, you just name it, they've got a support group for it. Literally thousands and thousands and thousands of support groups out there, and that's their lifeline. And today is a great day to be a caregiver, because there's really no excuse to not have a support group or to be suffering from burnout today, because the tools are out there at your disposal. So yeah. It sounds like you've already answered my first question, which I didn't ask yet. What got you interested in burnout and compassion fatigue? Did you leave anything out from that question?
Oh,
or did you basically cover it?
Well, that's my background. I'm interested because I burned out myself, and then I see other caregivers in the medical community burning out like crazy. It's a huge problem. Particularly now in the days where it's not uncommon for a physician to have to see 40 patients a day during a 7-minute visit. And it feels, I have so many physician friends who've burned out. And depending on what your particular area is, the burnout rates vary, but they're up to the, in the 80 percentile level for a number of not only physicians, but nurse practitioners, nurses. It's a very, very difficult system, and it makes medical care less efficient for all of us. And if we burn out, sort of bite the hand that feeds us, we're going to starve in terms of medical care in this country. And burnout in terms of medical care also manifests as compassion fatigue, because when we hear traumatic stories day in and day out from other people, we ourselves get a form of secondary trauma, which is what compassion fatigue is called. And what happens is we tune out to protect ourselves, and that means that it's harder to access empathy. And it turns out empathy is a very big part of healing. That's why people often feel better when they speak with a therapist or a nurse or a physician or a social worker. And so if your healer is burned out, that's not going to happen for you. And it's like a toxin that's spread through the whole system, Dave.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And, you know, the perception out there is that professional caregivers are immune from burnout as opposed to family caregivers, because, you know, the perception is that they're getting paid and they're just doing their job and they really don't care anyway. But that could be the furthest thing from the truth. Yes, there are caregivers who are out there who are cold and impassionate and just do it for the money, but they are such the minority. You know, they're the rotten apples of the bunch. Most professional caregivers are actually very caring people and would make excellent family caregivers. But like you said, they're seeing 40 people or so a day, and they're just giving their heart and soul to each one of them. And I've heard many times when they come home, there's just nothing left. It's like 40 times worse than being a family caregiver, because they've done it 40 different times with 40 different people that particular day. So you are so right. And the thing about getting, I don't know what the word is, but jaded from the reality of what's going on. It's like watching violence and killings on TV and the movies. After a while, when the real thing happened, it's like, oh, you know, no big deal. I've seen killings 100 times. I've seen, you know, things being blown up so many times. It's just per se or passe is what I meant to say.
Yes. Well, that's right. And that's a symptom of burnout, is really the loss of the sensitivity of the heart that makes us human.
Right. So now that we've defined it, what are the early signs of burnout that you've noticed in yourself and others? You know, the red flags that we could say, uh-oh, danger, Will Robinson.
And that's really important to think of them as red flags. It's there is a burnout scale that has, it's brief. It has about 21 items.
Really?
And it looks at early stages of burnout. And when burnout was first studied, Dave, the stages were enumerated, a dozen different stages. And I think we all know, as in stages of grief, that not everybody grieves or experiences burnout in the same way. You can't go down the list. So
right.
there's some variation. But the very first stage of burnout is the sense that, and this is going to sound strange, I think, to some people, it's the sense that you're the hero, that without you, your loved one would crumble, that
right.
the whole world rests on your shoulders. That,
amen.
That, yes, people who don't take it on that way don't tend to burn out so much. So it's a red flag already if you think you've got to do everything yourself and everything
right.
is dependent upon you.
Mm-hmm.
As that kind of ripens, it has some consequences. You don't get the help you need. You don't take the time for yourself. As you said, you don't put on your own oxygen mask first. And for me, one of the first signs of burnout is that I get impatient. I get snarky with the people that I love. And
yep, sure.
that's for me, that's a dire sign. I think, oh, my God, kindness means so much to me. I think human kindness is what we're here to share. In fact, I have a T-shirt with one word on it, kindness, and I often wear it when I travel, and TSA people will stop me, and stewards and stewardesses on airplanes will stop me, and people will say, ah, that's what we need, more kindness in the world. So when I notice myself being unkind, it hurts me deeply. And the busier I am and the less time I take for myself, the less self-care I do, the less kind I become. So I notice that. And then the physical symptoms really pile up. I think a lot of people notice the physical symptoms. And, of course, my field is the mind-body connection. But the stress-related symptoms are so great in our society in general, Dave, that about 90% of visits people make to their family practice docs are stress-related. And so when you're starting to burn out, that means you're stressed, and you're going to have some of those symptoms. And so it might be something musculoskeletal. Like I can tell from the state of my hips what my burnout level is. Because when I start to burn out, things are happening in my body. I know what's going on as the stress is causing more inflammation. And I've got a bit of arthritis. So when the inflammation goes up, the pain goes up. And we may all have certain inflammation-related aches and pains. So for some people, their back goes out. For some people, their shoulders go out, whatever it may be for you.
Wow.
Then there's the problem of sleep disturbance, which is very, very common. If you find yourself waking up at night, not getting a full night's sleep, not being able to go back to sleep if you awaken, or having trouble falling asleep, that's very often related to stress. And if you find yourself picking up every cold that comes along, that's stress-related as well, because stress compromises the immune system. Then, of course, there's gastrointestinal problems. You know, you get a stomach ache. You get a lot of gas. You have trouble digesting. You start to gain weight because stress disturbs the cortisol balance in the body. And if you're making too much cortisol, you start to pile on the belly fat. Then piling on the belly fat creates an immune problem because belly fat is what we call a cytokine factory. It makes inflammatory factors. And you can begin to see how the stress of burnout starts to pile up in terms of physical problems. Maybe you get headaches. Maybe you have a tick around your eye. There are so many manifestations. Then, as burnout gets more serious, the manifestations are really the loss of the ability to care. You just burn out your sense of empathy, and that distances yourself from your own good heart and
yep.
from the good heart of others. And the people you loved begin to seem like pains in the neck. And so you start to resent. And when you start to resent and not to care, that's a big part of the burnout process. And it can progress to a sense of really losing your motivation so entirely that burnout looks like serious depression. And it's not a pretty picture because you lose your capacity to care.
Wow. Many people think the opposite of love is hate, but it's not. Love and hate are very, very close. I love you, I hate you, I love you, I hate you. The opposite of love is actually apathy. So you're absolutely right. If you're starting to feel apathetic about your loved one or your caregiving responsibilities, that is serious. That really needs to be looked at. It sounds like what you've really been explaining the last 5 minutes is that burnout is a disturbance of the rhythm that's in us, right?
Well, it is. It's a rhythm disturbance. I have a very, very dear friend, Dave, and I know that some of your listeners would enjoy his book. His book is called Sabbath, and the author is Wayne Muller. And Wayne's been on Oprah a number of times. He's a very, very great thinker. What are the questions that matter most? What is a life well lived? And Wayne is actually a minister, but he does more with training leaders and working with millennials than traditional ministry. But he works with a lot of ministers, caregivers. He's really a wonderful man. So Wayne Muller wrote a book called Sabbath, and the importance of taking time off. Every religion since the beginning of time has got a Sabbath day and
sure.
a time of rest. And if you don't, Wayne explains really very poetically, it's like a rhythm disturbance because everything you're doing may have its own note like a piece of music, but it's the rest stops that make music beautiful, that give it its rhythm. And if we don't have any rest stops, daily ones, weekly ones, monthly ones, if we don't get away, we develop a rhythm disturbance and life loses its savor, and it affects everything from our diurnal rhythm, hormones.
Yep. Yep. You know, you're so right. The Sabbath is so important that the Jewish Bible, the Torah, talks about it and how important not only for people to take a Sabbath rest, but every 7 years they're supposed to give the land a Sabbath rest, and that God would provide the fruit from the ground during that seventh year, that they don't have to plant and sow. That's one reason why Israel was invaded by Babylon and was taken into exile for thousands of years, because he said, you never gave the land a Sabbath rest. It's called the Shemitah. And he says, now your land can have its rest because I've removed you. You see, the Sabbath is supposed to be a blessing. And if you don't take it, it becomes a curse instead. So you're absolutely right on that. And I want to take this opportunity to have a break because we have so much to talk about. Let's just take a break right now for a couple of minutes, and we will be right back. Don't go away. One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to that day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. And I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You will be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchase it on the author's website, David Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your copy. Just go to OneArmOneLeg100Words.com. That's OneArmOneLeg100Words.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to take our short quiz to help you assess if you are a candidate for burnout. And if so, where you are in the burnout process. And just for doing that, Dave will send you a special gift. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast on his website. Go to CaregiversCaregiver.com. That's CaregiversCaregiver.com. And now, let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And we're back interviewing Joan Borisenko, author, professional. Joan, you're still there, right?
I am.
Oh, good. I love it when the guests are still there. Hey, we're having a great time. We're having a great time talking about stress and burnout. Let's shift gears a little. Does time management help or hurt?
Well, in the professional sense, we're beginning to think that it hurts, because what it is it's an excuse for getting people to do much more work in much less time. It reminds me a little bit of that old episode of I Love Lucy, which I think many of your listeners might remember, where she's working on a candy packing line.
The assembly line,
right. She can't keep up. She keeps stuffing the candies in her mouth and all the rest, because there's only so much that we can do as human beings. We need rest during our day. When there's a certain amount of time management that is necessary, but in a professional sense, and now I'm talking as not a home caregiver, but somebody who works professionally in the field of mind-body medicine, it feels like the system, as I've said before, Dave, is so toxic because you're expected to do more and more and less time. And
we've
all got to find the right rhythm for us. But I think what's most important is to learn to take breaks during the day. And if somebody, for example, is giving care at home, you've got to look at what's the rhythm of what you need to do for that other person and how you can honor your own rhythm at the same time and not think that you're a robot of some type that can just fit more and more and less time, because it's the rest stops that make life fruitful. I've got a quote that you might enjoy, and it's from Thomas Merton, who he was a tremendous Christian mystic. I came across his work because I've been in a field where meditation, the relaxation response that comes from meditation, the changes in your genes that come from meditation, the change in your attitude that comes from meditation, have been widely appreciated. And Thomas Merton happened to have been a Catholic who was very, very interested in restoring meditation to his own tradition. And a young activist wrote Thomas Merton a very famous letter. And he really wanted to know how to do more, how to be an activist. And I want to read you part of Merton's reply to him. And whether or not you're an activist as a caregiver in your own home, or an activist on a community level or a larger level, it's really important to realize that overwork will kill off what you do. So here's Merton's reply. Mm-hmm. There is a pervasive form of contemporary violence, activism and overwork. The rush and pressure of modern life are a form, perhaps the most common form, of its innate violence. To allow oneself to be carried away by a multitude of conflicting concerns, to surrender to too many demands, to commit oneself to too many projects, to want to help everyone and everything is to succumb to violence. The frenzy of our activism neutralizes our work for peace. It destroys our own inner capacity for peace. It destroys the fruitfulness of our own work because it kills the root of inner wisdom, which makes work fruitful. And, wow. You know, when I first read that, Dave, I actually sat and cried, and I thought, I haven't let myself be fallow enough, both in the week and in the day. And when I'm burned out, it really does feel like the root of inner wisdom that makes work fruitful gets killed off. If you want to remain juicy, if you want to remain happy, if you want to remain creative, if you want the seeds of good things to sprout in your life, you cannot overcommit to everything, including taking care of people. There needs to be room for yourself. And whether it's something like listening to music or meditating or going out with friends or whatever it may be, that needs to be at the very top of your list of priorities, or your caregiving will suffer.
Yeah, well, you mentioned meditation, and, you know, there are so many different kinds of meditation. The Bible talks about it. You know, there's transcendental meditation. What's your definition of meditation, and are all types created equal when it comes to stress reduction?
Well, that's a really, really great question because, for example, I mentioned Dr. Herbert Benson and his book, which is still a bestseller after, 25 years, which is simply called The Relaxation Response. He studied transcendental meditation when it first came out, and then he realized, well, what does TM actually do? What's the core of meditation? And what it does is it stops the constant inner conversation that we're always having with ourselves and gives us a break from that so we can experience a little peace. We can experience maybe a little bit of the silence behind the busyness of life. And when we quit the constant mental chatter, even if it's just for little periods when we're meditating, because you will catch yourself, of course, thinking. But if you catch yourself and you repeat, it doesn't have to be a TM mantra. If for example, my father used to like the Lord's Prayer, and you can repeat a bit from that, or the word Shalom for peace, or whatever makes sense for you. It doesn't have to be religious. It can be entirely secular. And that's what Benson found. The repetition of any word to kind of take up that mental track to interrupt your thinking brings you to a deeper place of rest. And there are tremendous physiological benefits because instead of producing stress, your brain produces a state that he called the relaxation response, which is the physiological opposite of the stress response. And it allows the self-healing mechanisms of your body to come into balance and do their thing. As the body most naturally comes to a state of balance, which we call homeostasis, if you just take the stress off the system. So many forms of meditation elicit the relaxation response. And I think all of them do. But there are really three basic branches of meditation. One is the kind of concentration meditation that Benson talked about, where you're using a word, a phrase, a prayer to interrupt your regular thinking. Another one, there's a wonderful form of prayer also come up through the Catholic tradition called centering prayer. And there you use a prayer word, but the idea of the meditation is to keep an appointment with God, just to keep an open mind and an open heart and invite God into your mind. And when you start thinking, you use a prayer word like a broom that sweeps away your thought so you can just sit in silence again. And then over the past 20 years or so, the form of meditation known as mindfulness has really come into the public eye. When it's present, in law and education, in every sector of life. And that form of meditation means that you're really paying attention to the precious present moment and realizing when you start to make judgments about things, when you start to get snarky about things in your mind, when you start to wish that this was happening instead of that was happening, which is, of course, a crazy wish. If at the moment the person you're caring for is in pain, if you can simply be present to that moment, present to what you need to do, present to their pain, you can be a lot more peaceful and effective. And if instead you're holding on to wishing it was some other way, well, it isn't some other way. This is what's happening. So mindfulness helps you in daily life to have more equanimity, to be more present, to be to enjoy the beauty of the world more. And that's important because even on a day that may be stressful, even on a day where you have a lot to do, where your loved one is in pain, the sky is still blue, the clouds are still white. There's so much beauty, and mindfulness allows you to be more present in the moment, and you can just use your breath as a focus to bring you back, keep coming back to the moment. So that's not only a meditation that you do with closed eyes, but a meditation you learn during the day. Like if you're showering in the morning, it's your choice where your mind is. You could, for example, be planning the day. You could be worrying. You could be doing a lot of things. But in fact, you're taking a shower. And the feeling of warm water and suds and washing your hair, if you have any,
wow,
can be very, very pleasant. And so mindfulness is focus on the now. Notice you're breathing. You're here. Feel the sensations in your body. Enjoy the pleasure of the moment, and I think that's a great skill for everyone to learn, whether or not you sit in meditation.
Yeah, it's a form of spirituality, isn't it, what you're talking about?
Well, yes, I would say it is, because if we can't receive the gifts that are around us all the time, then we're not appreciating the creation. And if you think about just what is spirituality, it's a wonderful, wonderful psychiatrist from Harvard Medical School who actually defines it as a constellation of 8 positive emotions, which remind me a lot of the gifts of the spirit: love, joy, peace, patience, compassion, love, trust, faith. And when we're feeling any of those things, we feel so much more expansive, present, able to love, and it calms down our whole nervous system because all of those emotions, which we define as spirituality, do very good things for the healing system and the balance of our own body. So I like to say to people, spirituality is really not about a particular belief system. The proof is what spirituality is that ability to be spacious and present to what is and have that sense of love and compassion, peace and joy. And regardless of your belief system, that's a human capacity that we all have within us, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, guilt is an interesting word because when we expect too much of ourselves, you know, like getting back to the organization list, I should be doing this, I should be doing this. And even when you're trying to take a break and stop and meditate and do nothing, and the brain won't stop. The first thing you're thinking about, I shouldn't be doing this, I've got this to do, I've got this to do, and you start feeling guilty. And in my book, I talked about guilt pretty extensively, you know, and I made a silly little analogy about guilt is like a diaper, a disposable diaper, that when you're feeling guilt, there should be a red flag in your head. Okay, I'm feeling guilty. Is the guilt, there's two kinds. Is it justified guilt or unjustified guilt? And basically, it's the same recipe, whether it's unjustified or justified. You ask yourself, do I deserve to be feeling this guilt? And if the answer is yes, then you would just fix the problem. You know, apologize, turn yourself into the police. Whatever wrong you've done, make it right. And then, like the diaper, you take it off and you throw it away. Because if you don't, you know, we all know what happens to a baby's bottom if you leave the diaper on too long. It just cooks it, and it becomes very, very painful. And on the other side of the coin, if the answer is no, I don't deserve this guilt. This person is trying to make me feel guilty for something that I shouldn't be doing. Or in the situation like, should I be taking this break? Yes, because if you don't, you're going to burn out. And, you know, just give yourself some grace. You do the same thing. You take that guilt, you wrap it up, and you throw it away. And basically, guilt is just like a little alarm clock to say, hey, there's a possibility that you're doing something wrong here. Are you? And if you're not sure, get someone else's opinion. How many people come up to you and say, you know, should I feel guilty about this? No, absolutely not. You deserve this. Don't put that on you. But we're so used as kids, you know, our parents make us feel guilty if we don't do or if we don't eat. If we don't finish our plate, you know, some of the silliest things we feel guilty about. So what's your opinion on how to get rid of guilt if someone is plagued with it?
Well, you know, I have two books that address that in part. I have a book about burnout with this simple title, Fried. and then
great title.
That was, oh, my 14th or 15th book, Dave. The second book that I ever wrote, my first book, which was a New York Times bestseller, is called Minding the Body, Mending the Mind. And then the second book I wrote, Minding the Body, Mending the Mind, was about what we did for people in the Mind-Body Clinic. It's a great book for overcoming stress, and it's got all the strategies in it of healing. But then I asked myself the question, how come some of the people who come to my clinic, and it was a 10-week group program, how come some people don't heal? And I began to realize that they didn't heal because they were guilty. They were harboring regrets about things they had or hadn't done and resentments. They were angry at other people and unable to forgive. And I realized that was a major block in the healing process. It really upset the balance of the body. So I wrote an entire book on guilt called Guilt is the Teacher, Love is the Lesson. And I was laughing to myself as I heard you talk because our thinking is so similar. I distinguished in Guilt is the Teacher, Love is the Lesson between two forms of guilt. Healthy guilt and unhealthy guilt. Healthy guilt is your conscience. That's the red flag that goes up, which is, you know, you really weren't kind, and you should make a repair and say, excuse me, I was feeling burned out. I got a little bit snarky. I'm so sorry.
Right.
Unhealthy guilt is what drives us sometimes to not give ourselves a break because it comes from an inner sense that whoever we are and whatever we've done, it's not enough. And so many of us suffer from that sense of we're always trying to prove that we're worthy of love in some way. And that goes all the way back, as you said, to our family of origin. And I had a very guilt-inducing mother because she herself was guilty. And she wanted me to be perfect. Nobody is perfect. It's that way. So you do have to distinguish. And I think you're right. Healthy guilt is great because it allows you to make amends. Unhealthy guilt is a killer. It really is. And people really need it. The affliction of thinking, I can't stop, it's selfish to take time for myself, is a very common manifestation of unhealthy guilt. And I can tell you right now, if you think you don't deserve to take a rest, you need to read my book. Because that's going to be what gets you in trouble physically, mentally, and spiritually. You're not going to feel the love, joy, and peace if you don't give yourself the break that allows you to replenish on a mental, emotional, and spiritual level.
Yeah, absolutely. You may have already touched on this, but what strategies have helped you and your clients the most?
One of the main strategies is building in peaceful practices for yourself during the day. And it's important if you get up, rush out of bed, do whatever it may be, whatever, you know, turn on the news, turn on the computer, rush to take care of whoever you're taking care of. If the start of your day is rush and hurry, it's going to set you up to have a disturbed nervous system all day long. So let's say your loved one typically gets up at 6 o'clock, something like that. If it's at all possible, make sure that you get up at least a half an hour before and start your day with whatever practice makes sense to you. This morning, for example, my husband and I got up and we listened to chanting and chanted along a little bit. It's in a meditative way. And then we did a little bit of spiritual reading about the message of that chant. And that helped us. And then a little bit of prayer. And different people have different things. Some people find, if I get right up and I get outside and I take a walk in nature and I do that, it calms me down. Everybody has a routine that works best for them. What you need to do is give yourself permission to do it, whatever it is, and to start the day on that calm foot that allows you to, it's like reducing the noise level in your nervous system by a big thing. Then I think you need to take almost a Sabbath break once an hour. If you took a 7-minute break every hour, you would find it was much different. Time for yourself, whatever that is. And if it's exercise, it's even better. Oftentimes, if I'm working at home, I'm writing, I'm at the computer, one voice in me says, okay, you're on a roll, don't get up, don't get up. And another voice says, your back hurts. You're doing yourself in here, and you're really, if you don't get up, you're in trouble. And the best break is to actually walk around, get a little bit of physical movement in there, do a little bit of stretching, whatever it may be. But if you take a couple of breaks like that during the day, then your muscles don't set in concrete by the time night comes. And another wonderful break, I think we have to start with our body, Dave. The stretching is terrific. Maybe there's a yoga class near you, or you can go and take Pilates a couple of days a week. So, and then you can do short breaks using what you've learned during the day. Those things make a very big difference. And I'll say that another very big healthcare, very important way to take care of yourself is focusing on what you eat. And we know now that our American diet of refined carbs, the low-fat diet that we were told that was good for us, that made people rush out and buy more high-carb, low-fat snacks, that's actually led to an epidemic of chronic disease in the last 20 years. We need to be eating largely fresh vegetables and fruit and whole foods. If you just get rid of the junk foods, eat whole foods, you're going to have so much more energy, and your body is going to be in much better shape. And that means that your mood is going to be much better, it turns out, for example, that it's not our brain that makes the majority of our neurotransmitters. It's actually our gut bacteria, and we've got to feed them good things. They need our probiotics, and our gut need prebiotics, which is fiber. And that's what we'll get from, not from supplements, but from real vegetables and fruit. So we have to learn to take care of ourselves, to move, to eat right, to take breaks, and then we're in our best shape to help others.
Yeah, that's right. You know, fruit is nature's candy. So if you just think of it that way, I love watermelon, I love cantaloupe, et cetera. And you talk about probiotics, you know, the cheapest, because they can get expensive, the cheapest and best probiotic that you can buy is the raw sauerkraut that they sell at Whole Foods that has to be refrigerated. Very expensive probiotics have like millions and millions of different cultures. Sauerkraut they've been using for thousands and thousands of years has billions with a B. That's a cheap way of taking care of yourselves. And I just want to back up a little bit. I've been making notes here. You're covering so much stuff. It's amazing. Getting back to unforgiveness, I always like to say it's like drinking poison and hoping the other person will die. It'll just rot your bones, you know, like cancer. Oh, I had a guest one time who talks about dealing with a demanding mother who she was caregiving for. She has this bell, which is so irritating when they have the bell, you know, ding, 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 always expecting you to come like right on the dime. And finally, you know, she was like demanding her dinner, and she figured out a way to neutralize her and get her point across by saying, yes, I can bring your dinner right now, but do you think I should probably do the kids' dinner first because they're really hungry? And then, of course, her grandmother instincts kicked in, and she's, oh, yes, 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 take care of the kids first. And so just finding creative ways to dealing with the stress is really good. Any comments on what I just shared?
I think that you have to be creative to deal with the stress, and I would add to that that the most creative way of dealing with stress is humor. I want to recommend to your caregivers, if you want some of the greatest psychological wisdom delivered in something so funny that literally, if you're a woman, be careful because you'll wet your pants. Go to the website of Loretta LaRoche, LaRoche, LorettaLaRoche.com. Loretta is a very dear friend of mine. She's done 8 PBS specials. She's like the Irma Bombeck of stress. And she is a riot. And everything she says makes so much sense. You lighten up. You get perspective on your situation. And it helps. She has the funniest recommendations. Even do something like wear a pair of those Groucho Marx glasses with the mustache and big nose that you can get. And suddenly, everything is transformed, just putting those on once in a while you're doing your caregiving. But she has so many strategies of simply looking at your situation in a different way, because life is, in fact, absurd. And if you see the humor in it, boy, you really lighten up.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if you know it or not. My wife had a stroke 20 years ago. She lost her speech. And she's paralyzed on the right side. She's been in an electric wheelchair for 20 years now. It happened when she was 52. But the point is that she has turned those lemons into lemonade, and she is amazing. She has such a great attitude. Of course, there was a 2-year grieving period that she wasn't doing very well, you know, accepting this, the grief process. But when she finally came around and realized that, you know, God is sovereign. He allowed this to happen for a reason. I'm not dead, so I must have a purpose here. And she just took a high attitude. She always has a smile on her face, always points up toward heaven and says, you know, I'm here for a reason. And she encourages so many people just by her presence and her attitude. People look at her and say, oh my gosh, you know, this woman hasn't spoken in 20 years and she's paralyzed in a wheelchair. What the heck am I complaining about? I mean, you know, my wife just makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers. And I believe in humor, and for the last 20 years, you know, we have a normal relationship. I mean, people feel sorry for me. Oh, you poor guy and this and that. But I really can't relate because I don't see a problem. I don't see, you know, things are normal. It's just a new normal. But because we're humorous about it, we make jokes and we kid around. And sometimes we shock people when we're doing our bantering back and forth. They like, oh, my God, I can't believe you just said that to your wife, you know. And they need to understand that, you know, that's how we deal with turning tragedy into normalcy, if that's a word. That we just constantly have fun. We're constantly making jokes. You know, and some people might say it's in poor taste, but you know what? It works for us. So I totally believe in humor. And don't worry about what other people think about your humor. You know, do what works for you because you're the one who has to live this life. You're the one who has to walk this road. You're the one who has to bear the cross that life has thrown your way. If Charlene can do it, my gosh, anyone can do it. So she encourages me all the time. And that's why I wrote the book about her, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, because she's just amazing. She's my hero. And, you know, when I start complaining and being critical about things or, you know, the traffic or, you know, my back hurts, I just say, well, how would you like to be trapped in a body that can't even speak? But she's a great communicator. You know, she's like the charade master. And we have this great dog. I mean, think about it. Dogs don't speak. And they can communicate with their eyes, you know. I mean, they have no trouble communicating to you when they're hungry, when they want to go outside, and so on. And my wife has no problem communicating. She can say about, you know, a handful of words, yes, no, my name. She can say no about 227 different ways with tonality, et cetera. So you know exactly what she means. No, 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 no. You know, and I mean, it's really funny. And people who see us bantering back and forth say, wow, you guys need to get your own reality show. So, I mean, that's where we're at here. So I can't believe how fast this hour has gone, Joan. How can viewers get in touch with you, read some of your 14 books, or just find out more about what you're all about?
Well, the two best ways is that you can go to my website, which just means you have to know how to spell my name. The first part's easy, J-O-A-N, Joan. The second word is Borisenko. It's all one word, joanborisenko.com. Borisenko, B-O-R-Y, Bori. Second part of it is Senko, S-E-N-K-O, Borisenko, joanborisenko.com. And then if you go to Facebook, put in my name, Joan Borisenko, and go to the community page specifically. The friend page has been full for years and I don't post, but I have a very active community on Facebook, about 21,000 people, and we have some really good conversations there.
Wow, well, make sure you post this radio interview on that Facebook page so everybody can glean from the wisdom you've been giving us for the last hour. So again, thank you, Joan, for allowing me to interview you. It's gone so fast, and I think we'll have you on again in the future. And thank you to my listening audience for tuning in today and every Wednesday live at noon Pacific Daylight Time. And don't forget that all of our shows are recorded podcasts, so you can listen on the same link any time of the day, 24/7. And they're also on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregiverscaregiver.com under the Uplifting Interviews tab. And we're also on iTunes. You can get there from my website's radio show tab. And just a reminder, when you're on my site, please don't forget to take the short quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout?, to assess where you are in the burnout process. And to get your free copy of my first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. That's the story of my wife's stroke that left her severely paralyzed. And gosh, it's been about 20 years now. And like I said, she makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers. A great uplifting book, $10 value, absolutely free. So until next week, may God richly bless you. Bye-bye. Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.